This morning we're going to start out with Brother Bob Gray, and he does have a handout to pass around, and Brother John and we'll pass that around. We'll ask Brother Randy if he can give a hand, and we'll try and get that dispensed as quickly as possible. So without further ado, I will introduce Brother Bob. And it's been a couple of years since we've had him here in our midst, and we do appreciate him being here today, as we do with all of our speakers. But he does have an interesting topic, and his topic, Israel's Travail of Trouble. Israel's Travail of Trouble. And I will turn this over to Brother Bob.
Good morning, brethren. Some of us got here a little late, thanks to the Michigan Highway Department and their care for the roads. First of all, you have love from your brethren at New Brunswick, and certainly we try to bring all our love with us to all of you. It's good to see you. I'm hoping that I get a chance to speak with as many, if not all of you, as possible. And, of course, I've seen a good portion of the brethren who are here in the last 2 days, so that's a start. And I'm really scanning around the room to see whom I haven't seen, and I'm glad to see as many as I do see. I must tell you that we do have our convention coming up this year. It's June 30th, July 1st. It is the end of this next month and the beginning of the next one. The July 4th is not going to be part of our convention. We do have some speakers that you'll recognize in this room, at least one, and maybe more. I haven't looked closely again at the program, but we do want to invite you. Did I bring enough programs for you? Yes, I have enough programs for each one of you, so please be sure you take one. If you don't get one and somewhere I can appropriately put them, Sister Rebecca will have them or I will have them for you. New Brunswick Convention, and the class sends love, as well as our Thursday night meeting, which includes other brethren who attend our meetings from time to time. Before the end of the session, and I have to remind myself of this, I will be giving you a copy of some of the things I won't be able to cover in this discourse. Time is already rapidly passing. But Israel's Travail of Trouble is very important to us. We have all thought about this in one way or another. This may be a different perspective for some of us today. We hope it is within harmony with the Lord's Word. And we'd like to first read. We're actually going to skip down right away to the very bottom of the page and read from the two boxes, just two portions, to give us a frame of reference in the book of Jeremiah. And our focus will be on these verses in a sense. And as I leave the messages a moment ago, I should have given you specific greetings from Jonathan, who wrote a message to us, Jordan and their families, as well as Brother Ken and Sister Virginia. Sister Sarah Easton, I don't know if Brother David was supposed to bring greetings from her, but I got it just recently. Or Sister Carol. And Nohan Harsha, who's down in Australia and had some really miserable experiences as far as being treated with surgeries and so forth. But he's okay at this point. Recently spoke with him, voice speaking. And there's one other. I think Sister Sherry Raber wanted to be remembered to the brethren here. Personal greetings I can give later. But let's read those scriptures. They're in bold. They're in the first box. The days come, says the Lord, that I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel and Judah. I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it. We're reading from Jeremiah 30, verse 3. Verse 7 now. That day is great, so that none is like it. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble. Well, we hear a lot about trouble these days for Israel, don't we? I don't think a day goes by when the news does in some way carry some of the messages of difficulty and or grief. And if you're one of those who uses the internet and looks at places like Israel NN, National News, IsraelNN.com, you will see from day to day one or another pictures of various missiles Katyushas or Grad rockets. You will hear about what has amounted to the last 20 years of Oslo-type intifada. 20 years, during which time more Israelis have been killed than you can imagine during this peace process. You'll hear threats made, must stop building, threats of annihilation, international political pressure to compromise even more than they've already compromised. People, including the Archbishop of Canterbury, suggesting that it is only logical that a man of peace, like the Pope, be given the opportunity to bring this conclusion, this everybody wants to see for Middle East peace. In other words, handing over Jerusalem to the Pope. And various travail in spasms. We observe that the prophet Jeremiah described the regathering of Israel, and we know this is in preparation for the kingdom, as a travail, a time of trouble, even the time of Jacob's trouble. But our desire today is to not only affirm that Jacob's trouble will have this Gog and Magog feature, but that it also contextually is describing, that chapter is describing, the regathering. That's why we read verse 3, the regathering of Israel. And what is going to be the regathering of Israel? Is it going to be a time of peace? No, it's not going to be a time of peace. It's going to be a time of horrific trouble. How do we know? We just read. That day is great. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble. We will read more a little bit down the road here. Let's actually take a look and start with the context and read verses 1 to 3. The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah from the Lord saying, thus speaketh the Lord God of Israel, saying, write thee all the words I have spoken unto thee in a book, for lo, the days come, that I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel and Judah. I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it. Well, we believe that's in process, don't we? But then verses 4 to 8 begin to explain to us that it's not a time of peace. And we notice, without repeating some of the words, let's go back, though, to verse 6. Ask ye now, and see whether a man doth travail with child. Wherefore do I see every man with his hands on his loins as a woman in travail, and all faces are turned to paleness. Have you ever seen a picture of anybody who is absolutely horribly shocked by an incident? I mean, really have their face absolutely, totally devastated, the feeling of devastation. I have in my mind a picture of a man observing his wife's body in a vehicle in Nigeria during the Biafra War period. You wouldn't want to be in that position. That man was so crushed. But that's the kind of image I get when every face is turned to paleness. For that day is great that none is like it. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble. And it speaks in the next verse of the time will be the time when the yoke of others will be taken off of Judah and Israel's neck. So logically, when we hear about trouble and we see that there are spasms, we recognize that this is a very logical explanation of how things have worked through the day of the Lord period. And Jeremiah describes this as the time of the bringing back as well as the time of great trouble. And if you hear me saying that over and over again, it's because I want to lay that point very clearly. With other Bible students, we too have rejoiced, have been enthusiastic about the positive experiences that Israel has had. And we've kind of groaned when they've had difficulties. But in spite of all the conflicts, all the difficulties that they've faced, there is this continuous progress of growth going back to 1878 with the establishment of that little community in Petah Tikva. Now, the word Petah Tikva has in it this expression that expresses gate of hope. And the words HaTikva you may be familiar with as the national anthem of Israel. I found out only recently that that was only the year 2004 that it became the official national anthem. That in 48 it was considered the national anthem, but that it was written, who knows the year? Would you like to guess? 1878. Exactly. By a man named Naphtali Herz Imber. Music was added in 88, but that song became the adopted song of the Zionist Congress in 1897. It's also interesting that there's an allusion when you read about it on Wikipedia, of course, the Valley of Dry Bones, which says things like, our hope is lost. This is a statement of our hope is not lost. That's a positive expression to be written and sung by these people who were hopeful. But we've also been painful witnesses, pained witnesses, shall we say, of what has happened. What do I mean by what has happened? As they continued on year by year, leaders seem to make incredibly dumb mistakes, or what appears to be dumb mistakes. Going back to, let's say, Ben-Gurion, just trying to, for the sake of establishing the state, conflicting with people like Menachem Begin, who wanted to take Jerusalem. To this other leader, Menachem Begin, who gave away the Sinai after Israel had retrieved it from or taken it from Egypt. Netanyahu having given up the Hebron area. Gaza being evacuated unilaterally with no benefits. And we've watched also the prophetic evidences, such as the nations round about continuously planning attacks and attacking Israel. We wonder when Psalm 83 will bring that to a conclusion, close down these attacks. And we also think about those scriptures in Zechariah that speak about all people, all nations coming up against Jerusalem, and how this parallels the Gog of Magog experience, during which God, G-O-D, will be glorified in Gog, G-O-G, who will be foolish enough to attack with their associates. So that whole pattern is laid out for us. When we examine Jeremiah 30, verse 7, in its context, we'll find that Brother Russell puts it in a context in at least 10 or 12 years of his writings, maybe more. And we also find it kind of reassuring. Think about what makes you reassured. To know that when you see trouble on the landscape, you think to yourself, the Lord wrote about that. He knew about that. The whole book of Revelation lays out the letters to the churches, the specifications of what will happen. We can say, we know our God knew about this. He gave this to our Lord Jesus. He gave it to John. They described all of this for us so that we could have a sense of well-being and comfort to know no surprises to God. And when we read in Jeremiah 30, verse 7, that there is none like it, no trouble like it, we have to have in our minds the language ringing in our ears, Daniel 12, the time of trouble such as never was. And in Matthew 24, the time of trouble such as never was, nor ever will be. These three chapters, Jeremiah 30, Daniel 12, Matthew 24, have a very common concept. Time of trouble, great time of trouble, such as never was. Now, if we think about the context again of Jeremiah 30, and we realize that there's trouble for Jacob, we have to also recognize there is going to be Jacob saved out of it. That's remarkable. It's Jacob's trouble, but Jacob gets saved out of it. That's remarkable. You'd think, well, Jacob's trouble, he's lost. But no, it's the other way around. Jacob is the one who gets saved out of it. In spite of what some might... Does this have to hiss like that? Can that be toned more bass or something? I'm trying to figure out why it's whistling. I don't normally speak that, I don't think. In fact, maybe we should call this Jacob's trouble in context. Now, we're not going to rehearse all of the reasons why Israel was cast out of the land and why they were put through what we call the double of disfavor. But we will refer to some of the scriptures. In fact, one of them, Jeremiah 17:4, you should find on your handout, right below the second box. I will cause thee to serve thine enemies in the land which thou knowest not. For you have kindled a fire in mine anger. That's why they were despicable and they got their lumps, so to speak. In Leviticus, way back in Leviticus, the words of the Lord, you shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments and shall not commit any of the abominations that the other nations did, lest that land spew you out as it did those who were there before you. Those are plain words. If you do this, big problems. And Jeremiah 16, which we know about the double of disfavor, I will first recompense Israel's iniquity, their iniquity, and their sin double because they defiled my land. And in Amos, I will sift them among the nations like a corn is sifted or grain is sifted in a sieve. And not the least will fall on the earth. Now, that's interesting, too. That least will fall, not the least will fall on the earth. It's as if the Lord is saying, I'm going to do this, but I'm not going to forget them. I'm not going to lose track of them. Now, in 1878, when the double of punishment without favor ended, it was the time of the Berlin Congress of Nations, and more specifically, the Cyprus Accords, in which the deal was cut for England to get control in the Holy Land and of Cyprus to allow purchases of land by non-Muslims. It was then that Petah Tikva was established as a result of that opportunity. And wise were the Jews from Jerusalem who named it Petah Tikva with the intention of giving hope to those Jews elsewhere that they might come and do the same. So when we read Hosea chapter 2, 14 and 15, where the words Petah Tikva are found in Hebrew, we hear, behold, I will allure her. This is God speaking about Israel, his wife. Remember Hosea's problem with his wife? She was not a very reputable lady. God's wife, Israel, was not reputable either. He makes the comparison. You think you've got problems? Look what I've been going through with Israel. I will give her, after I allure Israel, I will give her the valley of Achor, for a door of hope, Petah Tikva. And she shall sing as the day she came out of Egypt. Israel was not to be forgotten. O Israel, thou shalt not be forgotten of me. I have blotted out as a thick cloud of transgression, as a cloud, thy sins. Return unto me, for I have redeemed thee. This is God speaking to the Jewish people, to Israel as a people. Joel says, I will raise them out of the place where the Gentiles, that's my word, have sold them. In other words, the Gentiles have done their job on the Jews, or the Israelites, or whatever you want to call them, and God is going to redeem them from that. I'm going to open your graves, Ezekiel 37, bring you into the land of Israel. Amos 9 again. The waste cities will be built and inhabited. I will plant them on their land, and there shall be no more they shall no more be pulled out of the land I give them. These are on the handouts on page 2, these scriptures. And you can review them later. And I really hope you will, because no matter what I'm saying now, it will be individuals' personal opening of the scriptures and looking at these scriptures in the context of this lesson to make the real difference in your hearts and minds that there is some value to this lesson. Because this is just such an abbreviated moment to do it this way. They return during a time of travail. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 2 and 3, you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction shall come upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. That's what's been happening during the day of the Lord. That's what's been happening, as Jeremiah says, to Israel's experience, the time of their trouble. Travail, regathering. Travail, continuous regathering. Daniel 12 talks about the time when Michael shall stand up. If that doesn't mean to you what it means to me, review chapter 11, where every time one of the leaders in Daniel 11 stands up, it means he began to reign as a king, a potentate. Michael stands up. We believe that he has, in fact, done that at his return. He stood up. He began his responsibilities and reign. Daniel says Michael will stand up for the people of Israel. But in the next breath, time of trouble. In Matthew 24, the fig tree would put forth leaves, a time of tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world. But out of this old order, while the old order is suffering crisis and trial, Israel will be delivered, brought forth. You know, in volume 4, and this is also going to be on your handout, in volume 4, study 11, which is called The Battle of the Great Day, Brother Russell described what he referred to as the final blast, which will come upon the people, the regathered people of Israel. And it's under the subtopic, the time of Jacob's trouble. That was in 1897. That very same year that the volume had this final blast, Gog of Magog, Jacob's trouble, in that chapter, Brother Russell wrote this. It's on your handout. It's the boxes that are underneath those scriptures. Poor Jews, much of Jacob's trouble lies yet ahead before the faithful are gathered back to what was appropriately at that time called Palestine. 2194 is the reprint. Now, you might say to yourself, yeah, it lies ahead. But he doesn't say that. He says much of it lies ahead, which means something's going on right now. To verify that, let's look at the next year, 1898. He quotes from an editor of the Jewish World, and he's commenting on this, and he says, very evidently, the time of Jacob's trouble is not yet ended. Probably still greater persecution will shortly overtake them to drive them to Palestine and thus fulfill the Lord's predictions through the prophets. Notice the proximity of the two with respect to volume 4 especially. He's using the Gog of Magog, which we always have referred to as Jacob's trouble. But notice his language during these years. And then go to 1901. I'm just going to read the bold print. The time of Jacob's trouble is to last up to the very close of the day of vengeance when they shall be delivered by the setting up of the kingdom. Go to 1902. Jewish woes in Romania. It is the time of Jacob's trouble. The poor Jews are subjected to tribulation in one country after another by so-called Christians who are totally ignorant of real Christianity. Now it's Romania that persecutes. And then close to the conclusion of his ministry in 1910, Brother Russell said, our heart went out in sympathy for the Jewish people. And then the bold print, we especially rejoice to think that the time of Jacob's trouble will soon be over. Finally, the last quote, which is very important. I'm going back to 1895 now. This is before he wrote the other documents. But notice the prescient concept here. He is almost, it's almost prophetic. I mean, I'm not saying he's prophetic. It's almost prophetic. He says, yes, we are in the time of Jacob's trouble. We shall not be surprised if bitterness against that race shall reach such intensity as to expel them from Austria, Germany, France, Spain, Portugal. It wasn't long after that's exactly what happened. It was not. It didn't come during his life. It didn't come in 1914. But that was another stage of setting up for this. As you know, people were very, very upset with Jews because there were those anti-Semitic folk who could whip up the story. The Lord has promised to gather the remnant of Israel that shall come back to their own land with weeping and supplication. My, did they ever. With weeping and supplication. A place to finally find some safety. So in review, basically we're saying that, yes, Gog of Magog is the conclusion, the climax of this period of Jacob's trouble, but the experience of Jacob's trouble is the period of the day of the Lord during which they're regathered and they have the opportunity to be settled during a time of travail, trouble. Let's go to verses 9 and 10. On your handout, it's on page 3. And this is about Israel's being promised peace, but once the kingdom is established. They shall serve the Lord their God and David their king, whom I will raise up unto them. We believe that would be Messiah. I will save thee from afar and thy seed from the land of their captivity. And Jacob shall return. And we're going to the next little box of information. More about this from Ezekiel. And David, my servant, shall be king over them. Again, the bold print. My servant David shall be their prince forever. These scriptures need to be read more closely, but we don't have the real opportunity to go into more depth there. So the promised restoration was on the hearts of the apostles. Think back to what the apostles asked Jesus to do. Lord, teach us to pray. So what did he teach them to pray about? Thy kingdom come, but thy will be done. What kingdom? The same kingdom that's in Isaiah. The time when the lame shall leap, the desert shall blossom, the ransom of the Lord shall return. But after his death and resurrection, and the 40 days with them, the disciples asked him another question. Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? And as I said to a man who I didn't know was Jewish on an airplane once in 2003, he didn't say, are you kidding? The Jews just crucified me. Why would I do that? He didn't say that. He says, that's in the Father's time. So the kingdom they were taught to pray for, the kingdom that's mentioned in Isaiah, the kingdom that they are asking about is the time that we see in preparation. It was on their hearts. And Jesus indirectly told them, it's going to come, but we can't tell you the time, because as you remember, Jesus said, not even the Son of Man knows the time. At least not at that point. In Jeremiah 30, verses 11 to 15, and that's on your handout also, speaks about the full end of all nations. And that's an important time frame, the full end of all nations. No, I didn't get a call. I'm just looking for my watch. That's my watch right now. I have until what time? 45. Okay, that's coming up soon. All right, good. Thanks. Full end of nations, a result of the trouble that's going on. Israel will be going through their corrective period, and the ancient worthies will be on the scene to help them. I think it's very important for us to recognize that these scriptures in this block of text are telling us a very strong message. Though I make a full end of all nations, I will not make a full end of thee. I will correct thee in measure. And then it gets down to thy wound is incurable. It gets down to thy lovers will leave thee. Thy sins were increased. And we have to ask ourselves, why is he talking about the increase of sin? And about the only thing that seems to come solid in our heads is this. They were called back to the land by the fishers. They didn't go. And they have sought to have lovers, and they still do. Those are two things they should have done differently. They should have gone back to the land, and once there, they should not be seeking lovers and depending on them. Lovers meaning nations such as France to get Mirage jets, England for something else, the United States for money for this and that, and even now the United States wants some more technology. The United States gave them money for this Iron Dome, but now they want to know how the Israelis did it. It seems to be that's a policy of the United States. Express yourself negatively towards what the Israelis are doing, but then when they get something good, hey, buddy, how do we do that? The Lord said, I am jealous for Jerusalem and Zion, but I am very angry with the nations. This scripture reveals that there was trouble for the Jewish people during the Holocaust period, and this is in Zechariah 1:15. While I was angry a little, the nations furthered the affliction. Furthered the affliction. That's amazing. He was willing to have the nations do something that would be a punishment, but otherwise. So really, there's a lot of little details I'd love to talk about, such as why we should never say Palestine in the context of the modern time, because it doesn't apply anymore. Nor should we ever, even though it's been used this way, Palestine has been describing what was in the days of Jesus. That was not Palestine yet. That's a mistake. Even though we find it sometimes in the towers and the volumes, that was not the proper name at that time. It was Judea and Samaria. There's an important concept that's laid out as to how Israel will be saved. You're going to have to bear with me on this very briefly. The Valley of Jehoshaphat is the time when Jehoshaphat gets the message that they're going to be attacked and it's going to be merciless. And a Levite gets the instructions, go down into the valley singing and the Lord will deliver you. And when they get down to the bottom of the valley, the enemy is all gone. They've killed themselves. They fell upon each other with a sword. They did not have to fight them. We would love to see the time when the Israelites are faced with trouble and do not have to lift up the sword as they do now. We look forward to that time. And the Lord will do the deliverance. The Lord promised to restore health. I think we've given you a sense of the context. I want to spend a little bit of time drawing this to a conclusion. But first, I want to tell you about a booklet that has been prepared. I'd like you each to have a copy of this. If you don't want two in a family, think of it this way. The other one you're going to give to a good Christian friend. This is written to Christians, from Christians to Christians, about the future of Israel and the Jewish people. I want you to have a copy of your own. The booklets will be passed out to you now as I mention a few more points and then bring this to a conclusion. This booklet was published by the Oakland County Ecclesia. The value of this booklet will be to awaken Christians to the mistakes that have been made by their forefathers in the churches. And if you don't open the book now, it would be a blessing. Sorry. I want you to have it because I want to talk about it in a few minutes. But just have it in your hands, okay? This is an unusual way of finishing a discourse, I'm sure. But it has the rest of the story, okay, in many ways. So even though the governments of earth will be facing their termination as governments, people will not be terminated, governments will be. Social systems will be changed. We understand that. Heavens and earth are passing away. New heavens and earth are coming. We recognize that there'll be a time, as in Isaiah chapter 2, and you can go to the back of your handout toward the very end, it shall come to pass in the last days. Actually, that's not on your handout. It'll come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established, and all nations will flow unto it. I mean, this is a time of the kingdom. This is a time when that people, which were referred to as being cursed among the nations, will be in a position of blessing. Think of it this way. The children, the natural seed of Abraham will be a blessing, although as in Zechariah 8, they had been considered a curse, or even cursed in various ways. And they will go up, they'll say, let's go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Ishmael? No, Jacob. That's a blessing to know that it's very clear. And out of Zion will go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Then the nations will not lift up swords and so forth. You know, the house of Jacob is the one that's spoken of. Let us walk in the light of the Lord. There's a scripture I came across recently, and I wish I had it right in front of me, but it's basically like this. Let righteousness rain down. I think it's Isaiah 45. Let righteousness rain down. It's just a beautiful thought. Brethren, why is it so encouraging for us to realize for ourselves and for Israel that the Lord has seen these things far in advance and has laid it out and planned it so that there will be blessings, there will be encouragements. God will be sanctified. It's a comfort because even though there's trauma, even though we're reminded to lift up our heads as we see these things come to pass because our salvation draws on, likewise for natural Israel. And in spite of the sloppy behavior of the leadership, leaders who seem to be speaking strong words for holding on to the land, as soon as they become prime ministers, it's as if they have been given an injection with, how can we give everything away as quick as possible? There are watchmen. We are all familiar with Isaiah 52, 7 and 8. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace, that bringeth good tidings of good, that publisheth salvation, that saith unto Zion, thy God reigneth. Thy watchmen, verse 8, thy watchmen shall lift up the voice. With the voice together shall they sing, for they shall see eye to eye when the Lord shall bring again Zion. But 10 chapters later, Isaiah 62, verses 1, 6, and 7. For Zion's sake I will not hold my peace, for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as the brightness and salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. I have set watchmen on thy walls, O Jerusalem, which shall never hold their peace day nor night. Ye that make mention of the Lord, keep not silence. Give him no rest until he establish, until he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth. So the trouble upon Israel, for our Jewish brethren, is increasing. Pressures coming from all angles. Struggles are going on within the country. You have Jews in this country who are saying, I don't even want to talk about Israel. Young people, don't mention it. Don't associate me with Israel. T-shirts saying, I love Jews. I don't like Israel. A stronger language. What's going on? The new anti-Semitism is on the rise. It's easy to be anti-Semitic via being anti-Israel. Isaiah 45:8. Drop down, ye heavens, from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open and let them bring forth salvation. Let righteousness spring up together. The Lord have created it. Isaiah 45:8. Keep that scripture in mind as a blessing when you think about Israel. With the Lord's help, someday soon, as it was in the days of Elijah and Elisha, both of them being referred to by each, well, one by the other and another by a king, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. May we have that zeal that we could be looked to, at least in prophetic sense, as those who are speaking the words of the Lord, and perhaps to be taken to the Lord, not in a chariot, but faithful unto death. Please let me show you again the booklet now, just briefly before I turn this back over to our chairman. The booklet says much, but one of the things it says is that there are those in Christianity who have learned anti-Semitism since the second century. And there was reason for some of them to feel disgruntled with Jews. But as you go through this, it should build for you an understanding of how the Lord has brought them through travail and how he will bring them through in a final way, a conclusion. I really encourage you to read it over and please share it with someone else. And if you need more copies, you'll know where to get them. May the Lord add his blessing and give you encouragement as I give you one more thought. News like this, police to block those Jews who want to go up on the Temple Mount. In their own country, they can't go on the Temple Mount without causing a trouble. Another one. Herzl, at the age of 12, has a dream. A dream about Messiah. It's not a vision, it's a dream. What's he dreaming? He's dreaming that he was brought into the presence of Moses. And the person that's bringing him into the presence of is Messiah. Messiah takes him and says, this young lad is going to do good things for Israel. He was 12 years old in 1872. It's a very unusual date. The same year Brother Russell understood restitution. And interesting things happen. That's just a postscript. May the Lord add his blessing.